justice to the people. The Justice Foundation podcast, from legacy to legal. Conversations and chats about cannabis weekly.
Too much confusion on this land.
Hi, and welcome back. I'm Sean Hocking, and this is the Justice Podcast. This week on the show, I should say this episode on the show, because we don't actually get to do it every week, is Dwight Smith, who is a Justice Board member and connected and has worked with the foundation for quite a while. He is also the owner of Cafe Mellow, who are putting on the Justice fundraiser. Is it next month?
It's actually March 30th, so it's the end of the month. It's right around the corner.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of planning and work putting together. I wish it was the end of the month. I wish it was next month, but it's right around the corner, basically. So
let's start on that. So I mean, Justice obviously is a volunteer organization and needs funding. I'm also on the board. And, you know, the best way to do that is obviously have events. So thank you very much for hosting. What are we going to try and do at the event? And who are we trying to get interested to come along?
Well, at the event, we're trying to get as many people to support as possible in organizations so we'll be able to raise the funds to keep this organization going. So we're hoping to invite, you know, and attract industry leaders, people who are interested in the cannabis space itself, not only just about the uses, but like also the ancillary markets. We've got some sponsors that are involved, which is pretty good. I'm excited about that. We have artists who have whose works will be up for a raffle, and we have other in-kind sponsors. Cheryl, she's actually auctioning off her time, which is very, very, very important for people who can't afford, you know, access to Cheryl or, you know, legal information.
If you can actually find her, because she's normally on a plane going somewhere, doing something. Every time I check the Justice WhatsApp, I think she might live in airports. And I think she just lives in a sleeping bag somewhere, doesn't she?
Yeah. When you're doing the work, good work like that, you're always on the go, you're always in demand, you know? So it's praises to her for actually auctioning her time. So, you know, we figure we can do a lot of good with this event. There's artists that I've worked with. I have some of the artists I've worked with my last show. I have a relationship with them. So I said, hey, you know, this is cause. Would you guys want to participate? And they were really excited about it. So we're going to raffle off their pieces, about like 5 or 6 pieces. And it's a good way of, you know, as an artist, you know, most artists are struggling. So it's an opportunity to give them some support financially. And also, if persons or people have not started collecting art, it's a good way. It's an affordable way to enter into becoming a collector. You know, it's the raffle tickets aren't expensive. It's accessible. We have a few sponsors. Etain is a woman-owned medical cannabis company that's going to be participating. Dutchy as well. They're a POS company. Anchorage Holding is also participating. And we have another company who was actually, you know, we just got the information. They are actually donated a stay at Jamaica. It's okay. A resort. So they'll be participating, which is actually when they got into the sponsorship. I think I'm going to buy several raffle tickets. I need a vacation.
Just in case.
You know? Just in case. So pretty much that's part of how we're going to basically get support. We have a live music on that day. We have a couple of local singers that's going to be participating, and a DJ. And we hope to have some industry leaders in-house provide networking situations for people who are trying to get into that space, or, you know, trying to get accurate information about the cannabis industry itself and the social equity part of it. You know, far too many times people of color don't, you know, have the same information or gain access to the resources they need to be successful in this market, you know. So, you know, hopefully we're doing a few good things and making these things accessible for everybody who wants to participate.
So we want you to come along, and you're not just putting your hand in your pocket. You're actually coming to be part of something. And also, well, as you say, one should always help visual artists and musical artists. As I run an independent music label with all my people who live with no money, as well as my label, I know exactly what that's like. So yeah, support artists, support cannabis. Cafe Mellow, okay, where are you? And this, although we discussed it before, what's the date again and the time?
Yes, so we're located in Central Harlem. So we're at 345 Lenox Avenue. So we're adjacent from Sylvia's and Red Rooster. So we're in a historic area, in a historic avenue as well, Lenox Avenue. And again, the date is March 30th, beginning at 2:30 to 7:30. May go a little longer, depending on how many people show up. And I anticipate a lot of people will be there and having a good time. One other important fact I didn't mention earlier is that we're going to have a panel discussion, which Cheryl's going to moderate. She's a great moderator and speaker.
She's the queen of the moderators.
A few industry people receiving awards. We have a legendary Branson. He'll be receiving an award. Shice Bub from the Dipset. He'll be receiving an award as well. And Regina Smith. She'll be receiving an award. Regina's worked for Harlem Business Alliance for a very long time. Shice Bubs and Branson, they're legacy legends, you know. So it should be very interesting to have all these people under one roof receiving awards and having, you know, their followers and their community coming out to support them as well. And we also have Unlock that's been very supportive, and they'll be receiving an award as well. So it's going to be good times, a lot of information, you know, a lot of recognition. I'm going to be giving to people who have actually sustained the cannabis industry and, you know, allow or create the foundation for the legal market to even become an existence, you know. So you have to, you know, pay respect and acknowledge, you know, the people who have laid the foundation in their various ways, you know, to keep this cannabis business moving.
So, I mean, look, that's a perfect segue into what's your sort of connection with the legacy to legal market and what brought you towards justice. Look, for people who aren't in New York, who aren't part of what we're talking about and what we know about, what brought you, what's your experience, and what are you hoping for in the New York market over the next couple of years? I'm not going to say the next year, because that's just too hopeful. So I always say the next couple of years. But I mean, you know, let's dial back and you know, what was your sort of, how did you connect with the legacy market? Were you involved in it before this retail business? How did you work?
Oh, true indeed. My connection, my family's from the Caribbean, Jamaica, and, you know, there's, you know, it's culturized there, cannabis. It's culturized and demified at the same time, which is kind of weird, you know?
Yes, those posh Jamaicans are very, very rude, aren't they? But I know a few of them. I have some friends who also worked in Kingston at the top end of town, and you wouldn't dare mutter the word cannabis or marijuana in those circles, would you?
I know, which is mind-boggling to me. But
I agree with you totally.
And even about that, you know, I think Jamaica's missed out on so much financial like support from the global economy because of their, you know, just view on it, just being stubborn. You know, something that grows naturally, and it's very, you know, there's a lot of medicinal purposes. And I think, you know, because of propaganda, you know, just the image and the stigma that's been created, it hurt the country. You know, it's
well, I know. I mean, you know, look, Jamaica's music and arts, you know, there's a big connection with cannabis. Every young kid around the world who goes out to a dance party or is listening to music,
yes,
lose that connection. And not young. I mean, look, our age, and we're on probably either just the right side of 60 or the wrong side of 60. I mean, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? and
Yes.
you know, Jamaican politics through the well, 60s, 70s, and 80s decried that this should be part of the country's economy. And you know,
Yes.
all the names that we know around the world, we don't know those politicians' names, but we know we
Yes.
know Peter Tosh's name, that's for sure, don't we?
Yes. Yes. Peter Tosh, Bob Marley, and the list goes on. And I said it's part of the culture, you know, basically. But the government, for some reason, doesn't they never acknowledge it. Now they're slowly coming out, you know, and realizing that they're behind, you know, and try to catch up.
But
And just
it's been a,
economically.
actually, I'm going off on a tangent here because I've been, you know, I've been following Jamaica from day one when the US started regulating and legalizing in various states. And there was sort of a burst of excitement in Jamaica about medical cannabis. And there's some businesses, as you say, there's, you know, like resort type businesses, but they don't really seem to have put as much energy into developing that, protecting things like intellectual property and
Exactly.
those sorts of things that you would have thought they would jumped onto straight away, because you know, you and I both know that American capitalism is fairly predatory and it'll steal all this stuff really quickly. Jamaicans aren't, you know, they're not stupid, but they seem to be held back by the people in power or by the
Oh.
administration. What do you think is holding back the Jamaican industry? And look, this is the same throughout the whole Caribbean. You know, there was a big burst of energy 4 or 5 years ago. I remember just before COVID, actually, huge burst of information, people doing, and then it's suddenly just all gone silent. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that the government obviously has a lot to do with that in control, you know, allowing only certain people to have access to profiting from that. And I think that's what kind of killed the excitement, you know, creating like barriers to entry to actually access the market and resources. So people become discouraged, you know. The average person doesn't have the resources because they don't have the time because they don't have the resources to allow them to have that time to research, investigate, or to build, you know, so opportunity passes by. So the government, I definitely believe, has a lot to do with that. And
So
I
they, I
believe
mean,
that
they
needs to.
basically been feeding licenses or business toward towards elites in Kingston and around
Yes.
the country, you know, up in the mountains where you
Yes.
know. But in terms of people who have been growing or get, you know, the best organic weed on the planet for
Yes.
now, while we're talking 120 years, aren't we, basically? They're just ignoring that knowledge, those people, and the opportunity those people could bring to the Jamaican economy. I think it's crazy.
Yeah, it's just like I said, it's you're right, it's the business aspect of it that, you know, that's the system that's created that these farmers or people with all this knowledge and information, they don't have access to. They don't know how. They're great at what they do, but it's the business aspect of it. And that's where government has to have put forward more social resources to get these, you know, growers and these cultivators involved, you know, to help so they can help their lives out economically and help their people as well, you know, in these local communities. And you know, Jamaica definitely needs it. They have a lot of
Well,
resources
that's
and
I mean, it seems again a no-brainer, because it's, you know, some of these well, a lot of these communities are poverty-stricken, and they have access to a great amount of knowledge, and they could really build up the whole community and allow some of the younger kids, rather than getting into some of the things that they shouldn't be getting into, being involved in, if not growing, other businesses related to selling, branding, using. I mean, it just, I'm always amazed by the lack of support. I mean, and it does seem just like snobbery sometimes.
I just want to point on that. If the government doesn't want to do it, I think, you know, they should mandate these elites or companies in which they're given license and certain opportunities to mandate that they create programs to get, you know, these other legacy operators involved, you know, and have metrics to kind of track to see how they're actually supporting and what how to what kind of progress they've made, you know, to actually track this stuff. I firmly believe it's an obligation that they need to implement a system in which they're able to track and get other people involved who normally don't have access, you know. Firmly believe that. That's the my connection to cannabis initially, just culturally. My first experience with cannabis itself, like directly, I was a child. And I was visiting family in St. Anne's in Jamaica. And I got sick. I think I tell the story all the time. And had like nausea, diarrhea. And my uncle came out of the back room with a bottle. It's a rum bottle. And it had like all these plants and roots. I'm like, what is that? And he started explaining, what it is. And I remembered, he said, there was sensi and the weed and stuff, and along with other plants. And he actually gave me like a spoonful. It wasn't the greatest tasting thing in the world, But hours later, I felt relief, I wasn't as much discomfort as I was before. And I was like, wow, this stuff hurts. But it helps. It goes, it's on a, it's goes far beyond like things I used to see about cannabis. Only adults do it, and it's not good for you. And I'm like, wow, I feel better. Am I a bad person? And I realize it's not. And over the years, I realized that there's many uses for cannabis, just like peppermint, just like sage, just like rosemary. It's a natural herb,
It's a plant. It's a natural herb,
and
yeah.
anything in moderation, used properly, it can help you.
You're
So.
sounding like my grandmother, except she wouldn't say that about cannabis. She's dearly departed, but she was always everything in moderation, everything in moderation.
Yes, definitely. So that was my like consumption experience, first initial consumption experience. So I've been a big, advocate ever since. I'm like, why are they vilifying this particular thing? So there's a reason, obviously. There's many different stories, but it all goes back to the same thing, to discredit people, to give people a bad name and a label. The government, basically, but whoever they have a problem or issue with, or if they can't profit or monetize or something and control it, let's vilify it. It's the irony, even with cannabis in the United States, it's like it's a schedule, it's labeled as a Schedule One drug.
I know it's crazy, isn't it? But I mean, you can't even have a conversation with people who do that. So I mean, you're sort of stuck, aren't you, really, until they decide that it's something else, because that level of understanding means conversation is fairly limited.
Yeah, it's more dangerous than X, Y, and Z. How is
Yeah.
that? It's not even probably in its natural form. Like, wow, So it's that's mind-boggling still, to one degree. But I understand why they're doing it. But if you look at history, around the world, even the United States, at one point in time, even like hemp itself was mandated to be grown in the States, United States, by the
At that
union.
time, it was one of the biggest industries in the world because people had to sail ships all around the world, and people had to dress people, and that was the best way to do it because the cotton was only in places, like India. They weren't growing it everywhere else. And I mean, I just noticed in Australia this week that they've got all this land that you that they've got a whole lot of crops that use far too much water. They should be planting hemp, and then the government decided not to put money into hemp because. Who knows? Because because it's too difficult to argue in front of other people who might disagree with it. And hemp should be one of our ways out of a lot of the problems we're in at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a whole globally, we're supposed to be so advanced, but we've moved away from, hemp, things that are sustainable, that are very durable, that have multiple uses and economical. How do you move forward away from stuff like that, or products like that, or plants? And I mean, I get it, I understand, but at the same time, don't lie.
Yeah.
Don't spread propaganda, because you want to make your money. I get it. I understand, So again, moderation, a little bit of oil, a little bit of hemp. People can be happy, and
Yeah.
be in a space, What it's unfair. One person has all like the wealth in the world, and that's why that leads to other problems, with poverty and crime, when you have disparities in income and stuff like that. A lot of the solutions to many of the crises that we face, they're simple. They're simple. And I think if we try to, pay attention to them and implement them and stop being so greedy as a whole, we'll probably live a better quality of life globally. I
Well,
believe,
I don't
you
want to
know.
agree with you too much, Dwight, but I mean, look, I just fully agree. As you know, we're both of a certain age, and moderation and common sense is what's needed, neither of which seem to be in play at the moment. And you know, which sort of leads me into asking you, more locally, geographically, say in New York, do you think they're beginning to do a good job in terms of trying to get legacy into a more regulated market, knowing full well that for the next 40 years, there's always going to be that separation because some people don't want to pay taxes. They make it too hard for other people, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, do you think we're beginning to be on the right path to try and bring those two areas together and bring them together in the middle? Or do you think they've started on the wrong path and things need to be sorted out?
I wouldn't say that it started on the wrong path. It's just, you know, when you begin something, you begin at whatever point you think it should begin at, you know, and you move forward and you try to figure out, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And I said, there's never going to be a perfect situation, but you'll find mediums, I believe. Legacy to legal, not everyone's going to make the transition for different reasons. And I'm going to elaborate a little bit more and come back to that. I just wanted to explain, or you know, give an example. My father was we call a legacy operator now, use these terms, and you know, he sold cannabis for many years in the United States here, and he was arrested. It was actually in the state of Jersey. He was arrested. He was arrested in New York too for, like, you know, in release and misdemeanors and stuff like that many times, but he was caught, arrested, traveling New Jersey Turnpike with, you know, a large quantity of marijuana in the 90s, and did some time in Jersey State Prison for that, and was subsequently deported. I mentioned that story because
So
my
he was
father,
still a Jamaican citizen, not a US citizen at the time.
yeah, he was a Jamaican citizen at the time, so he was a resident. He was a resident. Exactly. He had a green card. So, you know, subsequently the punishment is deportation, you know. So he was deported from the family in the country. And, you know, one of the reasons why he went to the trade, because not only because it's part of our culture, and cannabis was very hard to access in the United States. And if you have means and ties, you know, it's opportunity. So it's an economic, I guess, crime or situation, I guess, right? And only that, my father didn't have many other skills, you know. My father didn't have education past the second grade, you know. So, you know, you did what you could, you hustled, you know. But as a consequence, actually, you know, deportation and separate from the family. So, you know, fast forward, you know, the legalization of cannabis in New York State. I'm like, wow, look at this here. You know, my father was deported, separate from my family, and now this market has evolved. It's legal now. Same thing that he got deported for is actually legal, and people tend to monetize from it now. How do you fix that? You know, how do you undo something like that, and basically, like, give back to families like the families that I came from and that was separated because of this. So, you know, I ponder on that, and I wonder, you know, what's the solution? How do you fix that? So there's different talks of, like, 40-acre mule giving back, or having, you know, people of color, this be their retribution. And it's a lot to think about, you know. So this goes back to what you said, you know, has it started on the right path, you know, a wrong path? And you start wherever you are, and you try to find some common ground and medium, because, you know, we can't undo a lot of things. We can't, even money can't replace, you know, the separation of a
Of
family and
course it can't. I mean, money
what's
is just,
happening
it's just a
between.
way of saying that we did wrong, but it still seems to take about 20 years to get it out of them.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like families and situations like mine, there's something needs to be done. And how do you do it? Even families have been impacted in the same way. They don't know that how to access information or resources to get, you know, compensation somehow by a license, or to get into the cannabis market, you know, the one, you know, they don't know. And again, because people don't have the resources or don't have the time. And also, if you do have the resources and the time, the information is so complex. It's not an easy process to
No, you got,
apply
I
for a
mean, look, you have to
license.
be a PhD in understanding government legalese to even get past the first page. I'd be hopeless.
Yeah, so it's like, is there true access now? Because, you know, it's so complicated, and it's not. It's not. So it's something's created. I don't say you have to create a system, but it could be simplified if thought if had thought out properly. But again, the government wants to heavily regulate, so it makes it very, very difficult. So did they start in the right place? I think they could have made better assessments of, real life situations and how red tape can make it difficult for people to access this. The people who I think should be priority. And not only that, in the market itself, not everyone wants to maybe want to pay taxes. Maybe not everyone wants to deal with the products that the state is producing or putting out for various reasons. Maybe the THC content. Maybe it's just how it's grown. I think New York State, they only can grow, the grows are only regulated. They can only grow, I think, outdoors, not even indoors, which is, it's very different from what a lot of people are used to. This is a change in the cannabis in the United States. Cannabis coming from Canada or the West Coast, California, Colorado, which is a lot of indoor stuff. So the variety is not going to be there. It was not there right now currently for the New York market. So that's also creating a problem. The reality is that when you have state dispensaries, the dispensaries have regulations and have to be in compliance. You need to check IDs. You have to swipe IDs. Not many people are comfortable with swiping their IDs because of, they may not have an ID. They may be on parole. They may have jobs. They may have concerns. I work for the government. I don't
Well,
want
the
people in
last
my
thing you want to
business.
do is end up on a LexisNexis database, which they feed straight back to ICE. I mean, we all know how it works. So, I totally concur. Understand totally.
Exactly. So there's things that the government or the state has to deal with alone that has nothing to even do with the legacy operators, because there's a big talk now that all these shops have popped up and they're actually hindering the legal market from flourishing. And that's not true. That's realistically not true. The government's handed out tons of license. Well, I say handed out, but applicants have applied for license and had license in a card round. They're sitting on their license. They have this piece of paper that they and they're stuck. What do I do with it? Because they don't have the money, they don't have the resource, they don't have the team in order to enter this market. So what happens now? They need to find funding. Far too many times, when people are in desperate situations, there's always predators out there,
Well, that's exactly the word I was about to use, because they're just sitting on the sidelines waiting to pounce, aren't they?
Exactly. And you being a novice or not. Don't have the acumen for to navigate through it. You fall victim, and it goes from it is sad again because here it is the people who have been victimized one way are going to be victimized again, and are stuck in these situations. So it's again, the question was, have we started in the right place? We can always do more, from the government standpoint, and I think a lot of these politicians need to think practically. The way they think, because of maybe bureaucracy or because they want to get in or have votes to say what sounds good, doesn't mean that it's practical and it makes sense. So let's make
Exactly right,
sensible
because you don't want to
decisions.
say the you don't want to say the unpopular things for the 3% of your voters, because if you lose that 3%, maybe you just might not get back in again.
That's problematic, especially in a country where, democracy is at the forefront of everything that we do, freedom of speech, freedom of this. But are we truly free to speak the truth? That's the thing. I'm more concerned
Well,
about the social
not on
gift.
this topic at the moment, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm going to lose these social gifts if I say the right thing or the practical thing, And what's happening, a lot of it's backfiring, I guess, because people aren't being honest with the situation. I'm not making rightful assessments. Okay, this is what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. Go to the people and ask the people what's happening. Not saying that people have all the answers, but you consider what the public and mainstream people say. I've had also experience in the legacy market. When I was in our college, there's a lot of cannabis floating around the college campuses. I guess it sparks the creative part of
We're running out of time already because we've already lost half an hour. We've only just started our conversation. So
yes.
I'm gonna have you back again when you've got 5 minutes, maybe after the fundraiser, so we can talk about
Yes.
how that went, and then talk
Yes.
about your own experience and your connections in New York and what people that you know, what they're doing and how they're thinking. Because I think that'd be really interesting for our listeners to listen to. Because the more the more they can hear real people speak about the
Yes.
topic, make them more confident. It makes people about being involved in being public and talking about it and not being scared or worried about people listening that they think shouldn't be listening to them. I think that,
yeah,
I think, you know, we need to think about that. Look, Dwight, thank you very much. And I'm sorry to cut you off so quickly, but say we just lost half an hour without even thinking. just remind anybody listening when the fundraiser is again, and also at your Cafe Mellow, where it is in Harlem, so they can, and is it where can they go online? Because I think they can buy tickets online, can't you?
Yes, please. Yes. So it's 345 Lenox Avenue, Cafe Mellow. That's March 30th, beginning at 2:30 to 7:30 p.m. And you can buy tickets at on Galabid or Eventbrite. So Eventbrite, you go to Cafe Mellow Harlem, our webpage. There's a link tree there. And from the link tree, it'll direct you to Galabid or Eventbrite. So you can purchase a raffle ticket, which gives you general admission to the event and an opportunity to win the raffle. Or you can just buy general admission tickets from Eventbrite, just general admissions to enter the venue for that day. So those are two ways you can purchase it.
And just remember, you can get a free holiday in Jamaica as well. So that's not...
That's nothing to pass on a visit. Yes, please. Exactly. What's in the raffle is a free stay at Coral Cove in Jamaica. A week stay, it's 4 days, 3 nights, and they specialize in cannabis and fungi treatments there.
It's a bit of a trip for me, but maybe I'll buy a ticket anyway, just in case.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, Dwight, thank you very much for being on the Justice Podcast. When things calm down after the event, I'm going to have you back, and we're going to talk about your own more personal experiences in the legacy market and where you see people that you... are talking to and know now what they're doing, how they're thinking, and where we're going. It's a slow process, but the more we talk about it, I think the more positive we can be about these things.
Exactly. It'll be more normalized.
Yeah, that's what we want. Normalization. So our kids don't end up what having happened to your father, basically. That's always my main worry.
Yes. Again, I definitely appreciate it. And, for having me on the show this morning. Give more justice
to the people. The Justice Foundation Podcast, from legacy to legal. Conversations and chats about cannabis weekly. Too much confusion on this land. Mm.